Hey everyone, before I get into this episode, I just wanted to let you know that unfortunately, halfway through recording this episode, Zoom dropped. So when it came back, my microphone switched to my laptop mic. So the audio is not as good as it should be, but the conversation is still fire. So I hope you enjoy our conversation. Thank you. Bye-bye. Welcome everybody to the Aris Meyer podcast. How you doing today? My guest this week is one of my best friends, a man that I met. I don't even actually remember how we met. Maybe he does. We'll find out. But he's one of the coolest people I know. His name is Leandre Pierre. How you doing, Leandre?
Hey, what's up, man?
Welcome to the podcast, finally.
The Aris Meyer podcast.
Yes,
Hop
sir.
Hop us about the big.
Hey.
Man. Say what's up?
The roles are finally reversed. I've been listening to you for, it feels like years now. You were the pod father. You had Hollywood Hype. Shout out Chris. Shout out Ricky.
Yep.
And Chris then you had Rhythm and Banter. Shout out RC.
RC. RC House.
Yeah, man. And that's where I
and all of those are defunct.
Hey, we like to say they're archived, man. They're oldies, archived. They're hits. You know, archived they're for the people.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So I got to hear you on those podcasts and it was really cool. I was very inspired. So now that I'm doing one, I was like, I have to have Leandre on my podcast, obviously.
Yes, definitely. And we all have been waiting on this podcast forever. Everybody I know has been like, Aris, please do a podcast. Aris, please do a podcast. So it's very excited to that you're finally doing this. I'm a huge fan. I've listened to all the episodes. I tell Aris all the time that I think he could be one of the greats.
Hey, thank you.
I think he already is great, but I think he could be one of the greats in the industry, not just amongst his friends, but in the industry as a whole.
I'm gonna try, man. I'm gonna push it and see where it goes. Honestly, it just feels right. Like I really, really enjoy the medium of talking to people, and you know, celebrities are interesting, athletes are interesting, but there's so many more interesting people I think that I just meet in my everyday life, whose opinions and experiences are like. That's what I want to listen to. So I want to bring those people to the world. So tell me a little bit about you. Where'd you grow up? Where are you from?
Well, first I want to answer this question that you say you don't remember how we met.
Well, we'll get there, man. We gotta map it out. I wasn't first.
Okay, so where I grew up. I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, born and raised. Had never left the South before moving to California when I was like 22. Nashville, born and raised all my life. All my family's still there. Most of my family have never been on a plane before. So,
wow.
I'm definitely like a black sheep or a trendsetter, or I don't know what the word is, but I was one of the first to like just leave the city and leave that town and like try to explore.
What are some things you miss about Memphis, or what are some things people might not know about
Nashville? You always say Memphis.
It's because I'm so used to like as big up. Yeah. It's in my head.
Yeah, 3-6 and all. Yeah. But I'm from Nashville.
Sorry, Nashville, Nashville, Nashville.
It's literally like saying Bay and LA, right? Like they're so far apart. I've only been to Memphis once in my life, and that's when I don't even remember. I don't know anything about Memphis.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna just fuck Memphis. I'm gonna just say it. Fuck Memphis.
No, I have to fuck Memphis, but it's to me, all the thing I knew about Memphis growing up was Jerry curls and gold teeth. That was like the thing.
That was Memphis.
Memphis was. All the dudes in Memphis had Jerry curls and gold teeth, but they were from Memphis.
Now I understand why you were in Nashville, bro. I can't see you with a grill and a curl.
Man, if I could have a Jerry curl, man, I'd be shutting it down. But what was the question?
So tell me some things about Nashville that people might not know. Like, what do you miss about it?
I mean, Nashville is looking back as I grew older, it was a great place to grow up. This is it's definitely a known city, but of still very much a small town vibe and still very small town. People are very nice. People are very courteous. Even going back after living away for so long, people will like just random strangers will wave at you. And like, you know, here in LA or New York, where I've also lived, like someone waves at you, they want something, you know, yep. They about to ask you for some money.
So
you train yourself to, in these big cities, you train yourself to ignore people like that or to like keep your blinders on and get to where you're going, where there are people who are just very like nice and courteous. And I think leaving Nashville, I was also very naive when I got to big cities because it is such a small town. So I was very naive. So I was just open and trusting to everybody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people would be like, hey, come with me. And I would go with them because, you know,
yeah.
In Nashville, it took a while to kind of get that grit and that like street smarts for me to not trust everybody because Nashville, everyone's so nice and courteous.
Wow. So you leave Nashville. Where did you go?
Well, first I went to college in New Orleans at a HBCU called Dillard University, a small HBCU called Dillard University. And that was my first experience like out of Tennessee. It was still the South, but New Orleans is like no other place in the mm-hmm. world. And I've traveled pretty extensively now, but it's like no other place, like its own little world. And so that was my first time like interacting with people that were not from Nashville, that were from like Chicago and DC and California. And that really opened my world up to like what else was out there, just being there. I really love that experience. I didn't stay there the whole time. I didn't graduate from Dillard University. I actually ended up transferring back to a school in Tennessee. And that is probably one of my biggest regrets because looking back, I'm like, I should have just stayed at HBCU because it was just college. I mean, we all know now it's a sham.
I didn't know, so you tell me.
Unless you know exactly what you want to do right, I wouldn't suggest it for someone that's like, I'm graduating from high school. Don't really know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to college. Unless you're like, I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a doctor. And I've been wanting to do that all my life. But I was someone that didn't really know what I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to be creative. So I think like college is something that if you don't know what you want to do, all you're going to do is get debt. So taking some time to figure it out before you go to college, what exactly you want to do in life. So I went there. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I kind of changed majors a bunch of times, but the experience of being at an HBCU and having like all Black professors and being around a bunch of other Black students and being exposed to people from all over, that was such a great experience for me. But then I ended up going back to Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. And then after Tennessee, you ventured out west, right?
Yeah. So not too long after college, I was reading this book. I'm going to try and make this story short. I was reading this book called
We Got All Night.
I was reading this book called, and I've also had a few drinks. I don't know.
Let's go. It's Leandre's birthday. So it's drink time.
Hey, turn up. So I was reading this book called Celestine Prophecy. Have you read that book?
I have not. No.
So I was reading this book, Celestine Prophecy, and this book was in the book. It goes over like these certain things that happen in life that you need to be aware of. And one of those things is if you come across someone that you've been thinking about, but haven't seen or talked to in a long time, like say like me and you were friends, but are like we kind of drifted apart. And then I'm like, what's going on with Eris? And I run into you. That means you have something for me to move forward in life.
Huh.
So it just so happened that a friend of mine from high school, who I hadn't talked to since graduation day. And I was like, I was reading this book. And for some reason, I was like, I wonder what happened to I won't say his name, mm-hmm. but because then the friendship. But anyway, that's another story. But but I was like, I wonder what happened to him. And then like 2 days later, I ran into him in a bookstore. And I was like, dude, I was just thinking about you. That's crazy. Like, you were just like running. And he was like, yeah. And we got caught. And he's like, I'm moving to San Francisco in like 2 weeks. And I was like, oh, man, that's amazing. And then he was like, why don't you come with me? And wow. I was like, I ain't seen you in like 4 or 5 years. Like,
stranger danger.
It's not going to come. And he was. And but then he like was like, well, can you help me move? Well, he asked me to help him move. And I thought like,
move what? From Tennessee to San Francisco?
Yeah.
This sounds like a serial killer movie, bro.
But, you know, a happy, naive Leandre did it. I helped him move. And that was my first time ever, like, venturing outside of the South. And mm-hmm. I helped him move to San Francisco. And I loved it. It was like, it my mind just exploded. And then I was like, I'm going to move here. I'm going to move here, too. And so I ended up... I came back home, I saved up some money, and then I moved back to San Francisco in like a month. In like
wow. 2 months.
Yeah.
Wow, you just did it. That's bold, man.
Yeah, yeah. And it was so funny because my job, which was now looking back a horrible job, but because I was making like $15 an hour and that was the most money I ever made with a college degree. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know if I should leave. This is the career going somewhere. But I was and they offered me a raise because they didn't want to stay. So they were like, well, you know, are you sure you want to do this? And they offered me a raise stay, and I was like, maybe I should stay. Like, I just got a raise, and I'm so glad I didn't, because of course I wouldn't be sitting here with you if I had done that.
Yeah,
I'll probably be in Nashville with a bunch of kids I don't like. But and that company closed down, like, I think literally 2 years later that company like shut down, but they offered me a raise, and they wanted me to stay, and I was like, no, I'm gonna go for it. I had no plan. The money I had saved was like $2,500, and I was like, yeah, I can live off this.
Oh my god, bro, that's 3 days in San Francisco.
Yeah, and I was thinking like, yeah, like I can live off this for a while. No, that was gone in like the first month.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So what was it like when you got to San Francisco? What did you do when you were there?
I mean, a lot of people have heard this story already, but I got so I almost don't want to tell this story, but
you don't have to. If you don't want to, we can skip it.
My friend, I had reached out to, and he told me that I could stay with him. And actually, he was the one that inspired. Was like, come back, like move back, like there's nothing for you in Tennessee. Like, he was the main one pushing for me to move, and so I was like, yeah, I'm gonna do it. And I moved there, and then I talked to him the night before, like, yeah, my plane arrives this time. And then when I arrived in San Francisco that day, he did not return my call. And I was at the airport. I was like, are you going, like, you said you're going to meet me here. He didn't return my call. I was like, okay. Like, because I was there before, I kind of knew the city. So I was like, I know, like, airport is kind of far, so mm-hmm. I'll meet you in Union Square. And then I like caught the train down to Union Square and called him again. He didn't answer. Like, the whole day he didn't answer. Wow. And then I was like, what? And I had all my bags, I had everything I owned, like a big duffel bag, suitcase, like all this stuff, and I'm just like full of sweat making my way through this city my first day, trying to like I'm gonna go out and explore the world.
Oh my god, bro.
And I rented a hotel room that night, and I didn't hear from him for like 2 days, and
there goes the $2,500.
But the thing is like, I was just like, yeah, exactly right. The thing, I was like, okay, I'm not gonna give up. So I immediately like jumped online and started looking for places, like emailing people about rooms. And the first person that emailed me back and was just like, yeah, you want to view it in and I took that room. So like in, so like in 2 days I had a room. It was on Treasure Island, which I didn't realize was an island between San Francisco and the East Bay.
Yeah.
So it was like a very hard place to get. It was only one bus that traveled there and one bus that traveled back. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, and I've been rocking ever since, you know, like,
wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. And he eventually did reach out to me and he was like, oh yeah, I got my days confused. You still need to stay with me? And I was like, dude, it's like 3 days later. And I, yeah.
Hell no. Hell no.
But his purpose, now I realize his purpose was just to get me there. It wasn't for us to be lifelong, you know, hardcore friends. And that, I almost cursed.
You can curse. It's fine.
I was like, that motherfucker is back in Nashville. So
is he? There you go. Yeah. Karma's a motherfucker, ain't it?
Karma's a motherfucker.
All right. So you're in San Francisco. And now it is time for how we met. How did we meet, sir? I don't remember. I feel like I've known you for my whole life. I don't remember when it was.
Oh, yeah. We about to get into it. You ready?
Oh, shit. Are you ready? Here we go.
So the first time we met,
uh-oh,
I was living with your brother, Joe, who was on a previous podcast, like two podcasts ago.
Two podcasts ago, yeah.
Two podcasts ago. I was living with Eric's brother, Joe, who's also a great friend of mine. Was living with Joe, and you and a bunch of people came up for an event.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time we met. Like, we didn't really get to know each other. It was a bunch of people that came. Our Todd Akimi was there, I remember. Our good friend Mauro was there. I met you all the first time that time. The second time was almost the exact same story. I was moving to LA, mm-hmm, and I was supposed to stay with my friend Chris, Hollywood Hype Chris.
Shout out Chris.
Shout out Chris. Supposed to stay with Chris. Chris and his girlfriend. I was supposed to stay with them. And the 2 days before I'm not trying to put Chris' business out there.
Yeah.
But
tea time.
I'm like, I'm not trying to tell his business. But him and his girlfriend at the time, and Chris is a lovely man and he's married with kids and a wonderful actor, everything now. But him and his girlfriend at the time, Chris, she was a great girlfriend. She knew Chris wanted to act, and she said, you go study, be an actor, and I'll pay for everything. So she was working and paying for everything. 2 days before I was supposed to come stay with them. And she also was like, and tell Dre he can come down and stay with us because I know he wants to be in entertainment too. Mm. 2 days before I was supposed to move down, they broke up.
Oh no.
And she kicked him out or he left, but they broke up, and then he was looking for a place. So mm-hmm. then he ended up staying with a friend, and I didn't have a place. And so then at the time, I don't know how or why, but him and Amaris, our friend Amaris, had become friends. So he reached out to her and was like, Leandre's supposed to be here in 2 days. He doesn't have a place to stay. Do you know of anything? And then it just so happened that, what's his name? Brian's brother.
Hanson
had just moved out. And he was your roommate. And so then I took Hanson's spot. And
oh, yeah.
Now we're about to get into it because Eris didn't like me at first, y'all.
I didn't? I don't remember that at all.
Eris did not like me at all. And you were like, this is my brother's friend. This is not my friend.
I have no recollection of that.
And I was like, I just want to be everybody's friend.
That's how I was introducing you to people. Oh my God. I'm sorry. That is embarrassing.
You were like, yeah, this, I don't really know him. It's like someone that used to live with my brother Joe, but I don't really know him. And then like Eris would be like going out doing stuff without like, and wouldn't invite me.
Oh my God. That sounds crazy because I'm such a homebody and you're such a homebody. I was surprised. I'm surprised I was going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, small things like you would go like to another house party with our friend like Jesse or something like that.
Oh,
together and stuff. And then you would go. And then like, then I would get a text from like Jesse, like, why didn't you come with Eris? And I was like, oh, I didn't. What's happening?
Oh my God. Bro, I'm so sorry. That's crazy. I didn't even. Wow. Wow. I'm a shitty friend.
That's but we eventually became the best of bestest friends.
Absolutely. And I do remember those years of living with you were really cool because you were like, you were into movies, you were into books. We would talk about philosophy, religion. You came to know that I was a huge, huge fan of Malcolm X. So we would like sit in the room and watch like Malcolm X speeches on the computer. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And you were the only person I've ever done that with, because up until that point, no one gave a fuck. No one wanted to listen. You know, no one cared what I was into in that way. But I feel like we got really close because we both had like a very creative spirit and it was just like very similar people.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I knew your brother first, and me and Jove are very close, but I definitely like identify with you more, and like was very like, we had so many things similar and like what we liked. It was just like, once Eris started liking me, y'all, it was instant.
Yeah, that's how I am. I mean, because of the way I grew up and my mom not being around, I have like a natural defense. But once somebody's in the club, they're all the way in the club. Like, they're my people. I'll put my heart on the line for them, you know?
Yeah.
So it was like that. I remember one time, though, this is how good of friends we became. You had gone to hang out with one of your friends, and you guys are going to watch a movie, and you invited me. So I came out to watch the movie, and I had never met this person before. And it was like, I think it was raining or something. So I had a shirt, and then I had a hoodie, and then I had a jacket covered in that. Mm-hmm. And I got there, and he was like, you must have like described me to him or something. Cause he was like, I bet you money Eris is wearing a Malcolm X hoodie and a Wu-Tang shirt underneath. So I walked up in my coat, and you were like, Eris, take your coat off. I was like, what the fuck? And he's like, just do it. So I took my coat off, Malcolm X hoodie. He's like, what's under? Lifted it up, Wu-Tang shirt. I was like, oh my God, bro. Are we twins now? Like, this, it was crazy. We became that close. Like,
yeah.
Just brothers, man.
True brothers. I mean, your father calls me Little Andre.
Yes, he does. You're one of us. You're a Meyer boy.
He calls me Little Andre, and I've been to y'all's family home, and
your how many people can say that?
I've met all your younger brothers, the brothers no one sees. I feel so privileged because I've met all of them.
I think you and Amaris are the only people that have met them.
Yeah,
I think that's it. I think.
Yeah. I always wonder why you guys never like have brought them with you and like.
Yeah. Well, there's a weird dynamic where Jove and I were raised in the church and they weren't. Mm-hmm. So it was almost like, how do you explain this group of people and these things I'm doing to them? Yeah. Like, there was like a big disconnect. And now that we're all like so much older, my youngest brother, you know, just graduated high school. That's like how big the spectrum is.
That's crazy.
But now that we're all older, like when we do see each other, it's a lot more like normal and high functioning, because we can kind of keep the crazy family members out. You know what I mean? And like spend time together.
Yeah. That's crazy you tell me that, because I have a picture with him on my lap and you just told me he graduated high school.
It is your birthday, and I'm not going to say how old you are, but we've been around, bro. We've been here.
We've been here for a minute.
All right. So, so when you moved to San Francisco, you were saying that you had had like a job, you were in college, and you didn't really know what you wanted to do. When did the dream of entertainment cross your mind? When did that start?
I've always loved writing, and I've always been kind of praised for my writing, even from like elementary school. People have told me, you're a good writer. Teachers have told me, you're a good writer. I used to write short stories in elementary school. In high school, I wrote a story. I still have it. I wrote a children's book, and my teacher was like, oh, like we need to enter this or whatever. And I, at the time, cause I didn't have these role models, right? I didn't have these things, people telling me like, you could do this. This is a thing you can do. Like, all my family are blue collar workers. My dad's a construction worker. My mom's a bus driver. So like, I didn't see those things as a possibility. So even going to college just happened to be because all my friends were going to college. So let me go to college too, you know? So I, that dream was there, but it wasn't, I didn't see it as a possibility, which I feel like is a lot of people. People don't realize, like, I have the potential and talent to be more than what I am. So I think once I graduated college and I originally wanted to do advertising and I wanted to be a copywriter. I was like, that's kind of a balance of being a writer, being a creative, but it seems still like a job I can possibly get. But I never got a job in advertising, copywriting. And that's what my degree is in. I've never worked in copywriting. And I think once I was working at this job, this call center job where I was getting paid $15 an hour and thinking I was like living the high life in Nashville.
that was what that job was, that they didn't want you to leave.
Huh?
That was the job that they didn't want you to leave, was the call center job?
They were going to give me a dollar. $1.
You must have been breaking in those calls, bro. You must have been killing it.
So I think at that job, I was like, I need to, there's something else I want to do. And I was like, what do I love? I love movies. I love writing. I love books. And I was like, I either want to be at first I was like, I want to be a comic book writer. And I was looking up how to write a comic book, and writing a comic book is the same as writing a screenplay. And so I started learning, trying to work on writing a screenplay. And that's when I started. And then when I met my friend, he was moving to San Francisco to go to school to get his master's in animation.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's what made me, and he was like, look into this school. And that's, and I saw they had like a film program, and that's what made me say, yeah, I think I want to do this. And that's, and that set me on that path.
What were some of the shows that you watched that inspired you when you were younger?
I've always had insomnia, and you've lived with me, you know this.
I would go to bed at like 10 o'clock and Leandro would be watching movies on his laptop, and I'd wake up to pee at like 3 a.m. and Leandro's watching movies on his laptop. That's real talk.
Eating cranberries.
Yep.
I always had insomnia, so I just stay up and I usually just watch, even as a kid, watch like Nick at Night for some reason.
Like Bewitched and shit like that?
Like Bewitched, I Love Lucy, Fame. Was a show that, and I don't really remember. I just remember loving, like, they sung and danced. And I don't remember any stories from there. And I remember Janet Jackson was on it. Taxi was like another old show that's still one of my favorite sitcoms today. And it's on Hulu for people that want to watch it. So I really like these really old sitcoms. That's why, I don't know if you've checked it out, WandaVision. I really like WandaVision.
I haven't gotten
because they're very going deep in through it. Each of the decades of sitcoms on that show. Taxi was, and then like Cosby Show, Different World, Martin, Fresh Prince, like all those classic sitcoms. I just loved.
So after watching these shows and going to school and deciding that you wanted to be entertainment, when did your focus shift to wanting to do screenwriting and show running and that kind of stuff?
So I moved to San Francisco and I was going to go to the same school as my friend. And I ended up not going to that school. But I did end up taking classes in screenwriting, and I was just like, what do I enjoy? And what would make me happy? And it really was just, making shit. And I was just like, I just want to make shit. I just want to do film. I just want to write. And I was writing these little short plays. And I remember when we were living together, for a moment, I didn't have a job. So I would go to the library every day and just write. And I remember the librarian coming over to me and saying, like, do you need some water or something? You've been like...
You got your first assistant, bro.
Yeah, she was like, you've been sitting here going. She's like, what are you working on? Are you in college? And I was like, no. And she's like, you've been writing for. And my first script, which was definitely not great, not good at all. But I just shed it out. Like it was just like three, like in like a day, I had written like a 30-page script. And I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. This is like, this brings me joy. And then I set on to study my craft. So I started taking classes. I had took a class in the Bay, before I moved to LA. And then when I got to LA, I took some classes, at PCC, Pasadena City College, and then some online classes. And I just kept taking classes. And then, you know, there's a moment there where I was still trying to get a job and was unemployed. I was living the unemployed, want to be an entertainer life. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, what's the best way for me to like stay afloat, stay in LA without having to go back home? And then I joined the military. I don't know where that idea came from.
That when you told me that you were joining the military, it blew my fucking mind. Cause like the Leandro I know is lounging like a Roman emperor, watching movies, eating cranberries, moving at his own pace. I had such a hard time picturing a yes sir, no ma'am,
and physically intense. I do too.
But I do remember when you came out of the military, you were fucking cut, bro. I was like, who is this man?
I miss those days. Yeah.
Look like a young Tyrese and shit coming out of the military, bro. Sweet lady.
I joined the military. I joined the Army National Guard because I think one of those late nights, when we were still roommates, I was researching like best way. I think I was looking at like jobs to stay afloat, best way to pay off student debt, best ways to make income and stay in entertainment. I was looking up all these things. And that was one of the things. National Guard was one of the things that kept coming up because it was like, oh, like you can, you work, you get to work like 2 weekends a month, and in the summertime, and you get this paycheck, and they pay off your student debt, and I was like, I have nothing to lose. Let me do that. It turned out it's not that at all. But that's a whole. That's a whole nother podcast.
For any inquiries, email Leo J. So you came back from the military and then you got into some projects really quickly.
When I came back from the military, I had found out about this program called Streetlights, which is a program for minorities and underprivileged youth. People from backgrounds like ours, and you fill out an application and all this stuff, and they basically train you to work on movie sets. And I was like, this is what I've been like, why didn't I know about this 4 years ago? I would never went to the military.
That's more your speed.
So I ended and some heavy hitters have come out of that. Matthew Cherry, who's a director. A TV director now, and he won an Oscar for his short film Hair Love. He came out of that program. I did that program, and just kind of I became like a production assistant, and I was just working on movie sets. And I met a lot of my film friends that I have now. I met a lot of them through that program.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, when did you start making your own? Movies and stuff like that, because I know you've made a series and some other things.
Yeah, so the first thing I made is called Not Enough Guys Named Philip, and that was a thing where me and two friends of mine, we were just like, we just want to make stuff, and I had met them through this program, and the goal was for us each to write, each of us to write a short film to film, and I know people very well. So I was just like, if I go first, they're going to be like, everything's your project. And so I was like, why don't, I'm not going to call out their names, but I was just like,
No shade.
I'm not going to spit no shade, but I was just like, why don't you go first? And then, you know, this person never wrote their script. And I was like, why don't you go first? They never wrote their script. Meanwhile, I had written like four scripts and I was like, okay, let's do. And then it became like, well, this is Leandre's thing and this is Leandre's project. But we made that short film. It was fine. And we really didn't know what we were doing as far as like I knew what I was doing as writing, but I had taken no classes and didn't know anything about filmmaking. I had been a production assistant, but I didn't know how to direct. I didn't know like about lighting and filming and like cinematography and like all these things. I didn't know those things. I knew about casting. So we cast like really good actors. Some of those actors I'm still in touch with today, but we cast those actors. And then I felt bad because they, you know, actors kind of go out, they read a script or something online, or they see the thing, like some role online. They're like, that'll be interesting, but they don't know what they're going to get when they show up to set. Right. And then they show up to set and we have like Cheetos and and like one little iPhone camera. Like they're like, what did I sign up for? Yeah. But they all went everyone did very well. And at the end, it was like one of the, like a very hard project, but I felt so satisfied. The most satisfied I ever felt in my life. And I had been through boot camp and all these different things. And I was like, wow, this is the feeling I want to have forever. Wow. Like it feels so creative. And it was, you know, a small little thing that we did with a couple of really good actors, but a little small thing that we did. But also with creativity, the thing that happens, and I'm so happy you're doing this podcast by yourself, because when you get other people's opinions and things into things, things erupt. So everyone had an idea of what should happen and what we should do. And like there was a lot of infighting and that's why it's important. And we're all still friends today, but there was a lot of infighting. It's just because people didn't know how to handle personalities. And yeah. So that ended. And then I got a call from your brother literally like a month later, like, hey, Dre. Miss you. Why don't you move to New York? I was like, yeah, I'll do it.
I remember when you moved to New York. I was sad, bro. Yeah. I was like, man, don't go.
It took a while for me. And the nice term for it is free spirit, right? Like I just kind of went where the wind blows. Mm-hmm. It took a while for me to like be a stable person. So if someone was like, come with me, go here, do this, I was like, okay. You know, army recruiters like, come with me, okay. Like I would just follow wherever the wind blows. Uh-huh. So your brother Jove hit me up and was just like, I just bought a place and I rented out, it's a 3-room loft, and I just rented out one room. And he was like, he was like, and then I thought about who should rent the second room, and I thought of you. And I was like, oh, okay. And it just, and I had such a sweet deal actually during that time, because I was living with our friends, Jesse and Caroline.
Yeah, in Long Beach.
And
like right next to the beach, too. That was a nice place.
Yes, right across from the beach. I paid, bless their hearts, I love them to death, I paid $600 a month.
Let's go.
And that included utilities.
Good Lord have mercy.
And now looking back, I'm like, that was such a sweet deal. And they, like, I know that apartment costs way more than that. And that, my room was huge. They were barely home.
That's like, the perfect situation for you.
That was a perfect situation.
But cranberries on tap.
But, you know, of course, Leandre likes it rough. So
if you're too comfortable, you're fucking up.
I'm going to
fuck it up. You need a little chaos.
So Jove gave me that call. I think I had already moved out because they had gotten married, mm-hmm. Caroline and Jesse. And they didn't want me to move. But for some reason in my mind, I was like, now that y'all are married, I can't be y'all's roommate.
So this is baby's room now.
Yeah, they literally had a baby as soon as I left.
They missed you.
I had moved out and I was staying with a friend, and then your brother called me to move to New York, and I jumped on it. I moved to New York, and I wasn't even like I had to like get approval from the military to move to New York. because
you were still enlisted.
I was a California National Guard, and I had to go, I had to fill out all this paperwork and go through all this approval process to move to New York. But then I moved to New York. But New York turned out to be the experience that I needed, as what made me into an actual true writer, filmmaker, artist.
Wow. Tell me a little bit about what happened to you there. What did you create there? What did you, what formed you? What was your final form?
Ooh, hard times. That's what formed me.
That's the story.
Hard times. That's the name of the biography, guys. Amazon.
Leandro, hard times.
Hard times. I moved to New York. Your brother has a beautiful apartment, and Jovi is a wonderful guy. I moved into his beautiful apartment. I don't want to take too long on this story, but I told you about my first night in New York. Have I told you about that?
You told me, but the people don't know, but I know.
I moved to New York. Eris's brother, Jove, is someone who is always on the go, always busy, always has things to do. So I got to his apartment that night, like 9 p.m. that night. And Joe was like, hey, Dre, welcome. Love you. Keys. Here's your keys. Leave your rent check on the counter. I got to go. And he left. And so I was in the apartment with another person, this woman. I don't even remember her name, but the other woman that was living there. And I had never met her before. She came out just briefly out of her bedroom to introduce herself and was like, nice to meet you, and went back in her bedroom. And I went into my new room. First night was also a winter polar vortex at night.
Oh,
like the coldest night in New York history at that moment. And the next thing you know, I heard her screaming, like screaming at the top of her lungs, help, help. And then I like came out. And she was in the bathroom on the floor, like call nine. She was like, call 911, call 911. And I was like, what? And she's like, please call. And so I had to, first time in my entire life I've ever called 911 for anything. And I was like, yeah. And then there, I was like, my roommate's on the floor. She's screaming. She's in pain. I don't know what's wrong with her. And they was like, what is her name? And I was like, I don't know.
I don't know her name.
I don't know. They was like, have she had any? I was like, actually, ma'am, I just moved in an hour ago. And the whole time I'm like calling and texting your brother who's not responding.
Of course. Yeah, he's out living it up. Probably he's out living it up. Soiree.
He's not responding. And the ambulance arrives. And I open the door, and the first thing, because Job has such a nice, beautiful apartment that has been featured in magazines and everything, the first thing they do, the woman's in the bathroom on the floor crying. The first thing they do is look all around.
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
And ooh, they're just like, nice. This is nice. You live here?
Who are black you?
Man, black man, open the door.
Are you Spike Lee?
So that was like, that should have been the sign for like what my New York life would be like. But I lived with Joe for like 3 months. And Joe actually charged me, looking back, very cheap rent, but rent I couldn't afford at the time, because I was just, you know, struggling. I was always struggling. That's the name of my second biography. Sure, yeah. Yeah, the second biography. Struggling.
Good Lord.
I moved out of Joe's place, which was actually really great for me, because then I had to create a life for myself, right? It wasn't like hanging on Joe to like introduce me to his friends and accept me in his world. I had to move out, and I found a place off Craigslist that was a little cheaper. And then like, as soon as I moved out, things kind of picked up. I got a job. And I got into an internship with on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. I ended up getting a kind of a freelance writing job that got me into the WGA, the Writers Guild. So everything just kind of picked up, and things just kind of got better. And I started doing improv, sketch, me and Brian, who was first your first pod, first episode, me and him took a, he moved to New York and me and him took our first improv class together.
Was it Groundlings or what was it?
It was Magnet Theater is the name of it, was the first place. And then I did UCB. I met just a bunch of people, a bunch of creative people. Things were going well. And of course, you know, when things are going well, I'm gonna fuck it up. So I quit my corporate job that I had gotten. I had gotten a really good job at Viacom, but some things happened where I was just like, I can't do this job anymore. And I quit that job and had went through just some difficult times, some hard times for a bunch of different reasons. But it definitely like shaped my story. And then from there, I was like, I need to like, and then I, in that period is when I started writing my series, The Sixth Degree, mm-hmm. which is totally different from anything else I had written. Cause I usually try to write funny stuff in comedies. And I know like you, Aris, you've like read some of my stuff and you've participated in like stage readings for some of my stuff. Mm-hmm. But like I wrote that series cause I was in like in a dark place. Right. And I was like, I want to do this right. And I met the right people and the right team and just really like invested in that during that time and to make that happen.
And you made that in New York, right?
I made that in New York. I made it in like a week.
Oh, wow, a week, really? It looks really good for something you made in a week.
Yeah, yeah. I had learned a lot since then. Like I had, you know, taken class. I've been on set. I had kind of understood how to direct more. I knew what different things were, like lighting, like gaffer, and like what it took to make, have a good DP, how to work with a DP, how to work with actors. I just knew a lot more than what I did with my first short film. And even now I know more than what I did when I did that project. So I'm hoping that the next project will be even better. But I just knew a lot more. And I made that in a week because I was work. I actually, at that time, I had gotten a contract job where I was traveling. I had to travel. And I took 1 week off from work and was like, we're going to film this. Knocked it out in a week.
That's cool, man. Yeah. I mean, ever since you moved back here after New York, I mean, you've been nonstop hustling, in my opinion. And you've introduced me to so many interesting people that are in the industry, that are actors, that are directors, that are writers. And I feel like every time I meet somebody new, I'm just more and more impressed by your circle. Everybody is so cool, so interesting. And you've given opportunities as well to us, you know, your friends. I mean, I'm not a trained actor. I'm not anything like that. But like you said, you had me do a live reading of your script and our friend, mutual friend, Ricky, his script mm-hmm. as well. Although I was typecast as the angry racist guy in both scripts, but you know, it's cool. It turned about a fair play. I deserve that.
Yeah, but you did a really good job and it turned out so well. That was such a good night. Like
it was so fun.
We rented a theater out. And that's the thing that I just, now that I realize like everything's not as hard as you think, make it in your mind. Right. Like you would think like, oh, that's a hard thing to do. But all I did was call a theater, you know, me and Ricky chipped in, rented out the theater, a huge stage. We cast our actors and then we just told people about it. And it was packed. Yeah, it was full house. And like you guys went up on stage and y'all did an amazing job. And every time I have that experience, where people are enjoying my work, I'm like, this is what I should be doing. Like people were laughing so loud that I couldn't hear y'all speak. And I was like, this is the most satisfying feeling. Like, this is what I should be doing.
Yeah, it's completely true. And, you know, I grew up very poor as well and didn't have people kind of telling me that I could do things and then I could be things and whatever. Even when I did act and stuff in school, nobody was pushing me. But now that we're older, all the tools are here. I mean, to do this podcast, for example, which I've been sitting on just because I have, you know, low self-esteem or whatever for years. I just had to go out and buy a mic, spend a couple hours figuring out how to edit audio, and then ask people to be on the podcast. And now I'm creating and I feel so fulfilled.
It's such a fulfilling thing. And then also like you have like what, 200, like 300 followers already on IG, and me and Shannon was like, that's those shows off, because I was like, man, I was like, I had a podcast with three other dudes. You by yourself with three other dudes, all with different like friend groups and networks, and we didn't get up to like 80.
Man, it's followers. I'm honestly like, the people that I've met in my life, I'm so blessed. Places that I've worked, church, just everybody that I've met has been like incredible. So I mean, it's humbling for me, bro. Like when I'm on Instagram, I have three accounts. I have my regular, I have an art one that when I started painting because of the pandemic, mm-hmm. and I have the podcast one. And every time I get somebody following it, I'm just like, oh, me? Really? Oh, good. Like, thank you. Like, I'm so excited that somebody cares about what I'm doing. Because I'm usually that person. Like when you have a podcast, or our mutual friend Shannon and Quancha started a podcast, I'm the first to listen. Like I love supporting creativity amongst the people that I care about. I'm such a homer, you know?
Yeah.
So
exactly. And I'm the same way. I love supporting. One of the things that I think is my talent and that I love doing is recognizing potential. Mm-hmm. And sometimes like I may come on a little strong with people, but I'm just like, cause I know you're great. Like I want you to be great. And maybe if you're great, you'll come back and get me. So
yeah, man, you pushed me great. And I really appreciate everything that you've done for me as well. You know, as a friend, that speaks to who you are as a person, that you have been through so many hard times and you still push yourself and others. And I think that's why your circle is so big as well.
Oh, thank you.
All right. So if people want to find your movies or connect with you, where can they find you?
On all social media, I'm at the T-H-E Leandre, L-Y-A-N-D-R-E. That's on Twitter. That's on Instagram. You can find me there. My series, The Sixth Degree, there's a website called sixthdegree.com. But also if you find me on social media, you'll find the links there as well. And we didn't really talk about it, but The Sixth Degree is kind of an anthology series and follows six different people in their own personal stories, but they're all interconnected. And there's another story from Amazon coming out exactly like my story, but
of course.
But you can find that there. And also if you just Google my name, Leandre Pierre, you'll find all my stuff. You'll find the first short film, which I'm very proud of. It's amateur, but I'm very proud of it. Not enough guys. And you will find The Sixth Degree as well.
Yeah, definitely reach out to Leandre if you're trying to get into that field of you know, whether it's writing or acting or whatever it is in that industry. Leandre has definitely been through the ringer and he could help point you in the right direction. And knows
I've done all the wrong things. So I'm
he could show him. Yeah. Tell you what not to do.
Yeah.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the lightning round.
Oh, I'm scared.
Leandre Pierre is the reason that I have a lightning round. I've shouted him out on quite a few episodes.
Well, I thought I was going to prepare for it, but I realized you ask different questions each time.
Yeah, that's part of the fun. I don't want you to have a prepared answer because I feel like that's where you really get the good stuff, you know?
Okay.
All right. So
let's see if our friendship lasts this lightning round.
All right. Tell me why New Edition, If It Isn't Love, is the greatest R&B song ever written.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. If It Isn't Love is the greatest R&B song ever written. It has everything you need. It gets you, it makes you happy. It brings you joy. If you watch the video, the best dance moves ever. Like, there's no other reason. Like, I'm kind of a bit tipsy as well, but... I remember forcing our friend, very waspy Jesse, to sit down and watch.
I can't imagine the commentary.
And he was like, yeah, it's a good song.
To be fair, he has never owned a CD in his life. No music.
No music. No None. Music. Like when you think of a person that's like, I can't imagine a person that doesn't like music. Yeah, that's him. Yeah,
that's Jesse.
But
do you know all the moves?
I do know most of the moves. Yeah, I would say, yeah, I know all the moves.
All right. And I know for anyone listening, that is Leandre's go-to karaoke song. So that if you go to karaoke, you will hear New Edition.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Next question. Right now. If you could join any R&B group all time, which one would you join?
Oh, this is that's a good question. Oh,
goodness. Lightning round.
Lightning round. If I could join any R&B group.
And I'll even say you can duet with a solo artist, an R&B solo artist, if you want to.
That just made it harder.
This is a lightning round, baby.
Okay. So if I could join any R&B group, it would probably be the Isley Brothers. Because they lasted a long time, like several decades. They had hits, and they have classics. And one of my all-time favorite songs is called "Atlantis" by the Isley Brothers. Just sounds like you just took mushrooms or something. Oh, it just sends you on a trip. So it would probably be Isley Brothers, but also like a duet, so many people come to mind. I would duet with Mary J. Blige.
Wow, really?
I think so.
Let's go.
I feel like I can hang with Mary J. Blige. That's fine.
Oh, okay. That's
I feel like I can hang with Mary J. So yeah, I would probably say Mary J. Blige.
All right, that's okay. Let's do it. If you could have written for any show all time, what show do you wish you wrote for?
Oh, this is an easy one. It would be a different world. I've watched it twice while in quarantine. It's so good. After the first season, and I could do a different world podcast, but after the first season is Lisa Bonet, who everyone loves, is great, but the first season is whack. And then Debbie Allen comes in, and she decides like, I'm going to revamp this whole show. And basically they fire the older white woman who was the showrunner, and she just takes over, and the show just gets revamped and it's an ensemble show, which is shows I really like, where like there's no main character, where each episode is kind of focused on a different character. So and it's just great. And it's funny. Jada Pinkett and Tupac episode is my all-time favorite. Have you ever seen that episode?
I've never seen it, no. I have to. Oh, man. Is that when they were in high school? How old were they when they made that?
No, they were grown, like college age. It's on Amazon, and it's free. Free on Amazon Prime. And there's an episode where Jada Pinkett, she's like the hood girl, and she goes to college. And she has a new boyfriend who's kind of like dorky. His name's Dorian. He's like the dorky. He wears like cardigan sweaters or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then her old boyfriend comes to town, and that's Tupac. And his name is Piccolo.
Wait, his name is Piccolo?
Piccolo, yeah.
Like Dragon Ball, like Piccolo?
Let's go. And they get into it. And it's one of my all-time favorite episodes. So definitely a different world.
All right. And here's the final question of the lightning round. This is the big one.
Oh, Lord.
You get a phone call.
Uh-huh.
Hello, this is Bad Girl Riri. This is Rihanna. You have the chance tonight to make all your wildest dreams come true with me, but you have to decide what movie we're going to watch to get me there. What movie is it? What movie are you watching with Rihanna?
Oh, okay. Oh, man. You should have told me you're going to ask these questions before I started drinking.
Hey, it's the lightning round, dog.
It needs to be something that that is romantic, but not Coming to America.
Coming to America.
Coming to America. I would watch Coming to America because I feel like it's a light movie. It's a romantic movie, but it's also a movie. You don't want to show a movie that they're going to be too engrossed in. And they don't want to turn it off, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you want to turn it off, you dog.
You don't want them, bro. You don't want them getting too engrossed in the movie. Like they want to finish the movie. They would be okay with like okay, like, let's move somewhere else because we're going to turn this movie off.
So she's my queen. I can't wait for Coming to America too. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
I'm very excited.
The cast looks so good. All right, my friend. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the people before we get out of here?
Hey, I had fun. I'm so happy that Eris is doing this podcast. One of my best friends, very talented person that I've always championed and believe that, like, yeah, he's going to take over. So I'm very happy, just excited and humbled to be a guest on your podcast. Finally.
Hey, wait a minute. Okay. Before we get out of here, finally, when I told Leandre I was starting the podcast, he gave me a 10-episode mandate before he would come on the show. That's why he's number 11. So don't let miss me with all that finally talk. You big shot at me, bro.
Hey, I needed to hear what the podcast was going to be about. Oh my God. I know Eris. He wasn't going to give me with his gotcha journalism. So I needed to hear what the podcast was going to be about before I jumped on it.
That's true. I did send him a couple fake like headlines of like questions I was going to ask him just to throw him off. Man. All right. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate your time. Happy birthday. And I look forward to everything that you're creating right now, man. The world looks forward to it too.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Peace.